Okay, let me get this off. Bonnie Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus for Cal State University Long Beach Africana Studies Department, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former college board of trustee for Compton Community College, and former school district board of trustees, Compton Unified. I want to thank each and every one of you for dialing in or zooming in to hear this most important presentation from an international perspective by Asar Jerry Jabal. And I want to also let you know that I have a co-host, historian Joe Hembrick, one of the most in-depth historians on spirituality as well as ancient truths and history of our people in early civilization. And we also have the good doctor, who's one of the most courageous questioners, I think, on the planet, as well as Brother Mashinda, another courageous questioner of our guests, as well as Rasha Key, who's responsible for this platform as far as the Community Education Network. And as he said, we seek truth so that we can bring it to you. And we hope you enjoy this presentation. It's part two of The Conspiracy of Silence. Asar Jabal is a well-known, recognized author, historian, artist, multidimensional man who has traveled to Japan, Africa, as well as Cuba and other places. So he don't just speak from just what he thinks. He also speaks from what he's experienced personally. And he's one of my best friends. We've been friends for a long time. He's an activist. We started out with the Nifu Kareem issue along with Irvin Hirsch. We went into the, we went down into San Bernardino to challenge the Ku Klux Klan. we've been through struggles along with many other issues facing Black people, and even one of the few students that they had to remove from a history class because he wouldn't let the teacher lie, the professor lie. So without further delay, we're going to go to part two of The Conspiracy of Silence, but I personally asked Jabal to also include some of his first writings, Black Truth, and Revelations, his second publication, one about the origin of the sound of words, where it came from, of letters, like where the A came from. You hear the word A, but you don't never see a definition of it. Well, why not define the letters that you pronounce, and then where they came from. He has a unique perspective of that, as well as in Revelations, where he talks about Black Revelations, and he talks about the mummy. And if you look at, read any scriptures, they talk about mummification of Jesus or any other sacred teaching. So without further delay, I'm going to let Asar Jabal start off. If you want to tell us any more about his who he is and what he's about, then we go to the question and answer. Go ahead, Asar.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. Very nice introduction. I had a program vaguely and that I was going to present. And then I fell ill Saturday night. We all, the family here, went out and something I ate didn't agree with me. And I was up all night, and in bed all day yesterday. But this today I feel a little bit better. And I felt like, look, we're gonna have to wing this, but that's all right. You know, that's what we brothers need to do, sisters as well need to do more and more. But I was just talking briefly with the family here, and and mentioning that I was going to do this program. And they said, was I going to ask me if I was going to talk about the alphabet, which, you know, which is really fundamental, because most of the scholars that I know, Black scholars I'm talking about, that focus on the ancient past will talk about the European interpretations of ancient Egypt and Rome and Greece and all of that. And by doing that, they're badly misinformed and misled, which just underscores the need for us to do our own research and find our own answers. Because, man, when you, if you rely on Webster's Dictionary or Oxford's Dictionary or Google or Wikipedia and Newpedia or whatever they call themselves these days, you're going to find that basically, in a word, they're really frauds when it comes down to ancient definition of not only the alphabet, but what all of that involves. They make no connection. I have in my house, down in Havana, a big dictionary of Webster's. In 1949, it was published. And the reason I use that dictionary is because it was before the civil rights movement took place. And was also before the end of colonization around the world, especially in Africa. And so you, from the definitions of how the white people were thinking back then, you know, we can form a foundation for some of the many modern problems that we face today. But in order to really get a full understanding, you have to go all the way back to the time of Egypt. And then from that, and make that connection between Africa and what that peninsula that we call Europe, and what happened in between, and just lay out those things. And then we sit down and we have our discussions about what it is we're facing today, the problems we're facing today, and what the foundations are. Because until we understand what the foundations of the problems are, how in the world are we gonna come up with any solutions? You know, solutions, effective solution. We can't do it. I think I mentioned this before. You can't do it politically, because this thing called racism is not a political problem. It's a genetic problem. You know, it's biological. And we have to face that fact. We have to, first of all, research and show that that is, in fact, the problem. And then gather ourselves and people of color from around the world and sit down and say, look, how are we going to approach this, and what possible solutions we could come up with to confront it? Because otherwise, we're just spinning our wheels, you know, because the problem, the same problems that we face today with these, so for example, police killing of us in the streets, or the prisons filled with brothers and sisters, and Black and brown people mostly, way out of proportion to the population in general. All of the contemporary problems that we see in the paper today, you know, with crime in our community, poverty in our community, drugs in our community, and on, and then it seems endless. You can't legislate, make laws that alleviate those things, because the root cause of the problem is genetic, it's biological. And this is what we need to understand. And we need to come together and discuss that very issue and determine what is the best way forward from that. So I hesitate to do it because I usually never do that. But I want to read a couple of things from this new book called Conspiracy of Silence, which you were kind enough to call Black Truth Part Two, I noticed. Which in fact what it is. It is a more or less a continuation because all of that stuff is really related, you know, it's not getting away from it. And you often not throughout Conspiracy of Silence, I found it necessary to refer to Black Truth and New Black Revelation as my earlier works, which confronts these problems.
excuse me, Jerry.
Yeah.
Conspiracy to Silence, is that has it been released yet?
No, you know,
okay.
That's another story, and I'm not going to dwell on it now because right now I've sent it in for the second time to get a copyright international book number from the U.S. government. The first time they delayed it. So the minute they did that, told me, yeah, I'm on to something. You know, this is something they want to delay coming out. So that's the first thing. So and also they responded after months in the middle of the pandemic when I was out of the country and couldn't get in. And so I wasn't able to, and they gave me 30 days to respond. Can you imagine? And of course I wasn't able to respond. So the term, the limit that they imposed expired. And so I had to start all over again. So it's okay. I took a year and a half that I was held down there because of the pandemic to re-edit and re-edit and, you know, refine things even more. So the version that I've now sent in a few weeks ago is even better. So we'll see what they come up with now and as far as delaying tactics go. But I wanted to just read a little bit, if I could, from some of the, this is stuff I was going to go over in the last couple of days and, you know, speak freely. But as I said, I was under the weather. So this is on page 9 of Black Truth. I spoke about the Nicene Council or Council of Nice, some of you may know it as, which took place in 325 AD. And it was a council called by the Roman Emperor Constantine in Rome. And it was the time when the historical version of the Christianity was accepted and imposed by the Roman government against everybody else. And all other religions were banned or outlawed, and anyone practicing them was literally breaking the law. So, and this took place, like I say, from the 325 AD and then went all the way up. And eventually Roman Empire became the Roman Catholic Empire, became the Roman Catholic Empire. But this part speaks about the aftermath of the Nicene Council. So a vast suppression of knowledge of African science followed, with the full cooperation and authority of the Roman government and their military legions. This is a conspiracy that continues to this day, supported by all the Western institutions of learning and by the great search documents such as Webster's and Oxford's dictionary, Google, Wikipedia, their encyclopedias, their hieroglyphic dictionary, and especially their so-called Holy Bible. Everything is designed to mislead the scholar into thinking that Africa, China, India, and the Americas, or more simply put, people of color, had nothing to do with contributing to civilization. Well, let me just explain to you what Webster's and Oxford, all of them, consider the definition for civilization. Webster says, civilization, the culture characteristic of modern Europe. Yeah. Check that now. As contact with civilization often proves fatal to savages. So exactly who are these savages? Now, Webster is referring to savages as being opposite civilized people. So Webster goes on to say about what is savages. Savages, one who displays unfeeling, brutal cruelty, one who shows utter disregard for mannerly behavior, characterized by cruelty, fierce, ferocious, inhuman, as a savage beast, a beast, pleasure, a human being living in a rude, primitive state, little removed from that of animals, one untaught, uncivilized, or without cultivation, often specifically an American Indian. Uncivilized, a people of a low state of culture. Synonyms: rude, brutish, cruel, pitiless, merciless, atrocious. Woof. So, wait a minute.
Professor Ra.
Yeah.
That definition sound like you know who.
Well, I hope he can get back on.
Yeah, he should be able to. I wonder why he probably had to do something. I mean, he can pop back in the same way he came on.
He could just say, I got to go, and he's not put the computer off. I don't understand that. Machinda, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Oh, man, just staying black, staying strong, staying committed, brother.
That's you right.
Know, right. So how's things down south?
Oh, everything's pretty good, you know, just, doing my part. Is everything, you know, we had some cold weather lately, so it's kind of, you know, it slows things down a little bit, but it's, you know, but it, other than that, everything is going pretty good, you know. You know, for some, you know, and we're trying to make it good for more. That's all.
All right, then. How you doing, good doctor?
Hey, Professor Rob, doing fine.
Good. How's things out where you at?
Everything is okay. Okay so far.
He's calling me. Let me see what's going on. Yes, everything okay?
What? Ancient Rome. You just, I wanted to give you an understanding of, you know.
You had just read.
Definitions. Anytime you disconnect from Africa, Africa's the origin of people, period. Anytime you disconnect from it, and that gives you the, then you can claim any definition you want for any word, because you never go back to the origin to prove. You understand? Mm-hmm. So this is what has happened, and what is happening. You can Google any letter in the English alphabet, and they always start, well, according to Wikipedia. Come on. Wikipedia, according to them, blah, blah, blah. And they never trace any sound or any part of the alphabet back to its African origin. And that is a huge disconnect, because not only did the European languages evolve out of Africa, but so did all the world's languages. And so that it's like chopped off the branch from the tree and said, this tree is it of its own creation. It's not connected, you see. And so without that, we don't have a clear understanding of the dynamics of racism, where, how it developed and why it developed. If you study the geological history, you'll see that from around the 10th century before the Christian era, 10,000 years before the Christian era, I should say, between 10,000 BC and 1500 BC catastrophe, the climate in the world was pretty even, common, and hardly changeable at all. And the result is that the people living during those era prospered to a great degree, and especially in Egypt, which is a unique country because of its physical location, being surrounded by desert and having one of the richest rivers in the world flowing through, and needing to, and that river flooding every year at a particular time. And then the people who live along that, the banks, had to learn when it's going to happen, how much inland is the waters are going to flow, how to establish the boundaries of the land barriers after the water receded, when to plant the seeds, when to sow the seeds, etc. And from that, and needing devices to measure those natural events, they created civilization. And a civilization that led to probably the most sophisticated building in the world, which is the Great Pyramid in Giza, which is certainly the most advanced, it required the most advanced mathematics and engineering. I don't think it's ever, it's not even matched today, even by artificial standards that they have today. That is what lifting machinery is. Mixing cements, metallic alloys, and whatnot, they still could not repeat that. So it just goes to show you that how far civilization had advanced until 1500 BC. Now, in 1500 BC, there was a meteor showers that had struck the earth, just the same kind of thing that had happened to destroy the dinosaur some 60 million years ago. They destroyed a large part of the earth. It didn't eliminate life, but it altered life so that whereas before the reptiles had literally dominated the world, the living world, now the mammals began, the rise of the mammals occurred in the aftermath. So it was a great alteration of life on Earth. Now, this is the Earth that we still live under. But in 1500 BC, there was another meteor shower, which people don't talk about, very little knowledge about, it, which also struck the Earth in various parts and, you know, caused the Earth to shake. Just like an explosion, literally. And it caused there probably tidal waves and huge storms and typhoons and you name it. And great migration in the aftermath of people and animals and insects, etc. And one of the great events, one of the great events was the downfall of Egypt, at least the beginning of the downfall of Egypt around 1500 BC. And at the same time, another was the creation of the mutations in the European peninsula. That peninsula became frozen in almost instantaneously, and it stayed frozen under thimble winter conditions for decades, so that the people, the inhabitants, were unable to move between villages or territories. And as a result, they ended up inbreeding to survive. Inbreeding leads to albinism, which is not just a physical loss of melanin that we're all accustomed to associating that with, but it affects you mentally, psychologically as well, as we should know. And we see that reflected in the way that these white people today approaches the problems that face it in the world, particularly the natural science. Whereas before, people literally worshiped nature. You know, the every place you look in the world before Christianity were nation worshipers all over. The whole world was. And it wasn't until this the advent of Christianity that imposed the worship of man, a man in the form of this Jesus and his father, which has taken over the thinking since then. So, any comments you have, and before I continue?
Masinda, you have any questions?
No, not at this time. Just very interesting. I'm a good listener tonight. Thank you.
Well, what about you, good doctor?
Same here. Same here. Okay. Just
okay. Brother Hembrick?
No, I'm kind of familiarized with what he's talking about, so I'm just following along.
All right. What about you, Rusty?
So, there was two meteor showers that you mentioned that happened.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
I said there was a meteor shower. You said in 1500 BC.
Yeah, circa. You know, not exactly, but in that area, that time frame. That struck, and you know, these meteors, they might be a single object, might be a comet or meteorite or whatever it was. Once it hits the Earth's atmosphere, they're subject to break up into many pieces, and in so doing, land in various parts of the world. And no one knows the, I mean, we didn't have history recording all of that at that time, but a lot of it was reported in Emanuel Velikovsky's book, The Earth in Upheaval, and which you should look up, all of you, to read, to realize that this happened and how it affected the European peninsula with what he calls Fimbul winter, F-I-M-B-U-L, which means constant winter in summer, winter, year-round, and for decades, and the people being unable to move freely between villages as they normally would have been doing were forced to, you know, take shelter and survive as best they could. And as a result, incestuous relationships develop, and they in turn leads to offspring, which are albinos. Now, you know, there might be some head shakers out there right now, but the proof is in the pudding. You look at the on the farms today, yeah, throughout the world, and you'll see there's chicken farms, the huge abundance of which are white. Pig farms, same thing. And on, most of these domesticated animals, white mice, white rats in the laboratory, which are all different from their native habitat. If they were in the wild, they wouldn't be white, because white is a dead giveaway, especially in the tropical or semi-tropical regions of the world. You know, the only place it would be a plus would be an Arctic region. So you won't find too many of those animals there, you see. And even those animals in the tropical region, such as polar bears, et cetera, are really seasonal, you know. They put on that white coat in the wintertime as a form of camouflage. Well, polar bears may not, but polar bears are not purely white anyway. But on most of the domestic farms and ranches, etc., you'll find an abundance of albino animals because they've been kept domesticated and they've been inbred. You know, farmers and ranchers selectively breed by artificial insemination, and oftentimes it's inbred, it's endogamous. So the result is albinos, which is what happened. Now, like I said earlier, is not just the physical appearance that is altered. It affects your mind as well, including the pineal, which secretes melanin. So, you know, when this is affected, and there's some evidence according to some scientists that the pineal gland is calcified in white people to some point to where it doesn't produce the melanin that recharges your sensitive organs when you're sleeping, which is what normally happens, you know. You sleep, you wake up, your eyes are recharged, your lips, your reproductive organs, all of those places which are the darkest part of your body have been refilled with melanin, and you're able to face the oncoming new day. So that's the situation in terms of the physics of it. Now, psychologically, they employ what I call projection, what science calls projection, whereby you take the worst of yourself and project it onto other people.
Wow.
And we saw an example of that in what I read a little earlier here was in the definition, Webster's definition for the term savage, whereby they called, and savages was the regular common word that denoted people of color. It didn't matter whether you was Chinese, Japanese, you came from the Pacific Island, South America, from Brazil, from any part of Africa, or Indonesia, any of those countries, Australia, all of those were called savages. They were called savages and heathen, you know, simply because they were people of color. And if I could just read it again, just to make the imprint, one who displays unfeeling, brutal cruelty, one who shows utter disregard for mannerly behavior, characterized by cruelty, fierce, ferocious, inhumane, as a savage beast. Pleasure, a human being living in a rude, primitive state, little removed from that of animals. One untaught, uncivilized, or without cultivation, often specifically an American Indian. Isn't that something? Now think about that for a second, you know? I mean, who is the greatest hero in the history of America, you know? Everybody said George Washington. Well, do you know George Washington, you know, was the son of people who owned a plantation? And he himself was a plantation, Mount Vernon, I believe it was called, down in, I think it's in Virginia. He owned more than 300 African slaves. Think about that for a second. He owned like you own, you know, a TV or a cell phone or property. That's what the great hero of America, that's his history. You know, and not only that, he had, oh my goodness, I don't know how many acres of land. I think something like 800, I'm not sure about that, but a large amount of it. And you got to ask, where did he get that land from? Huh? Mm-hmm. Whose land was it originally? You understand? This other guy, Jefferson, he was a planter. A planter of what? Tobacco on whose land? You understand? They took the land from the native people. Exterminated. In many cases, they marched the survivors off to the what they called Indian Territory, which is now today Oklahoma, and put them in concentration camps and made treaties with other survivors all across the Americas, all of which they broke. Every, I think, of over 300 individual treaties, all of them were broken in a matter of time by this. The Americans, the Europeans coming to America. So you get an idea of the savagery of the inferior complex that they engendered because of the loss of melanin, which made them strike out against any people of color. You know, and of course, growing up as I have, and I'm sure all of you have, then we know that this, the inferiority complex is still directed against us even today in every field, in every part of this country. So that's why I say, before we discuss the contemporary issues, we have to understand the foundation of the biologic of the biology of it, the genetics of it. And then we're better able to plan what the solution is.
Yeah, you had another question, Ross, about meters.
Yeah, I did. But Henry, go ahead.
I just want to know if you can put the brother on the middle of the screen. Like, we can't see him, at least not on mine. Little bitty one, I got Rod there. You on the big screen when he's speaking?
He's on the phone, Joe.
Oh, we can still see his picture.
No, you okay? You okay? I put the phone by the speaker.
Okay.
Go ahead. Arashiki.
Okay. I'm trying to get back onto the
computer.
Get the Zoom back on the computer here. But hey, everything it says it might take several minutes. So I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question, brother. Could you repeat that, please?
Roger,
you're muted.
I was going to ask you about Francis Cress Welsing and Neely Fuller. Are you familiar with both of them?
Well, yeah, I've heard Francis speak several times. Fuller, no, not personally, but I am familiar with.
Okay, because I know some of what you're saying is kind of in line with what they talk about. Yeah, so I just was wondering if you were familiar, because I know Neely Fuller is he's like 93, something like that, 92, and he has a weekly show. And he basically says that you can't solve any other problem till you solve the problem of white supremacy, racism, because he said that's the root of everything. So that's kind of in line with what you're talking about.
Right. Well, you know, of course, I'm in total agreement with that. But as I said, we have to, you know, understand the dynamics of what caused it in the first place, because it's not natural. You know, the Chinese, with all their billions now, have never tried to attack Africans or colonize them or go to war against them. And you can find that wherever you look throughout around the world. There's been some conflict between various groups of people in various locations for whatever the reasons. But all of those conflicts were recorded after the events of 1500 D.C. anyway. So, you know, that threw the whole world into turmoil. So there's bound to have produced conflicting problems. And so if we look at the world before that time, before 1500 BC, there's no evidence that people fought. There was no war. There was no such thing as war until that 1500 BC catastrophe occurred, and then it manifested itself with certain people depending on what their situation was. And certainly that was emphasized greatest, or so it seems, in what is today called Europe, in the peninsula of Europe. You know, when they first started recording history with Herodotus back in 500 BC, they come into view in war. They were at war with the Turks. So war has always been there, and it's always been in their psyche to build the great equalizer. What did they mean? Just think of that for a second, the great equalizer. What are you trying to make yourself equal to? You understand? You got to understand that this is an inferiority complex in that it manifests itself on the outside with them attacking us wherever we are, trying to dominate us, writing books on which ignore the people of color, which and building so-called sciences which ignore people of color and what they've accomplished. Great Pyramid was built thousands of years before the first European ever existed. Please, are you going to ignore and just wipe that off, pretend it didn't exist when there it is? You understand? So all of that, and not let alone the languages, you know, you trace back, go and look in your dictionary, just Google it, and everything goes back to the Greeks, very slightly to the, what do you call it, Sanskrit, which is another Caucasian part of what they claim was India, which is all bogus anyway. But at no time do they trace any terms, especially verbal terms, back to Africa, which is where they originated from. At no time. They just ignore it. It doesn't exist for them. And so you got to understand that these are people who recognize early on that they were different. Well, that's obvious in their appearance, but also in their psyche, in their, you know, in the way they approach us. You know, they want to dominate. They think and they tell people constantly and tell themselves constantly that they are the chosen people, that they were created that way in order to rule the world, to run the world. How many times have they demonstrated that, that by their attitude, that's just how they think?
All right. Well, what about the Caucasoid Mountains and then the concept of the Ice Age that they talk about. And you used to talk about the equator and the and that whole aspect of the effect of climate change and things of that nature that caused an enormous amount of problems for humanity.
That whole Caucasian thing, all of those fake terms that they invented in order to justify their activities and their history is just all of that, man. It's bogus. All of their terminology that they use to describe the various languages, you know, think about it. Most of what they call today different races is based on the Bible story of Noah and his sons. Think about that for a second. The biblical version, which is nothing more than folk story, you know, totally created without any science involved in it, whatever, is in which this Noah supposedly, you know, after the flood, with all this stuff never occurred, but anyway, supposedly one of his sons looks on his father who's naked, and that for some reason that was a no-no. And anyway, he comes out, and when Noah wakes up, he finds out that his son looked on him when he was naked, and condemns him, and not only him but his children as well. And I don't have the specifics right in front of me. It's all in my book. The children of one of the sons, Shem, are what is today called the Semites. Now, you constantly hear, if you read in Webster's language, in Webster's dictionary about the origin of any language, they'll assign these terms. For all the European languages, for example, are viewed as Semitic languages, which means they came from the descendants of Shem. The black people were the Hamites. So they were the brother of Shem was Ham, you know, Those are the black people, you know, all of our languages. And I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's no scientific validity whatever in the story. And yet, these books look at it as literally the trace and the origin of race and language and everything. And I mean, it's just a fraud, a bogus fraud, and it's so fake and phony. And because of our ignorance, because of this conspiracy to conceal these things from us, because of that, they're able to get away with it. And it's time that we respond, you know, and say, hey, you know, let's see for ourselves. You know, no, they don't teach this stuff in school. You know, I had to dig this out, and you don't know what I went through. I won't even go into it to dig out the information from sources, you know, from wherever I can find them over years in order to be able to say, to get an overall view of what happened and when it happened and what the results are. The Europeans are mutations, no doubt about it. And they view nature as their enemy. If it's not their immediate enemy, they view it as something that they can conquer, overcome, and better. They can one-up nature. That's their feeling. That's what they sent you to do. And just look at it. All of their science is based on that. And look at what it's brought the world to. I have here somewhere in my notes, I was going to mention the fact that when these Europeans set out for their, what we call today the Industrial Revolution. Well, I don't have it right in front of me at the moment, but since that time, that's about 200 and some years ago, the Industrial Revolution began, what they call the Industrial Revolution. And from that time, the acceleration of diseases and death have been incredible throughout the world. You know, as these people who claim to be, you know, inventing this, inventing that, using good powder, making bombs and cannons and metal ships and on and on and on and on. And all the time, they are assaulting, in order to do that, assaulting nature in every aspect of nature and destroying so much of the environments so that now, a couple of hundred years later, you see what the world is faced with in terms of not only global warming, but every environment is affected. And you affect even one part of nature negatively or anti-naturally, and it's going to have a domino effect. You know, it might not be visible immediately, but over time, it'll come to affect something that'll affect you personally. Just give it time. We usually don't live long enough for it, but that's what's going on. And now, this, look, when these people came out of Europe and into the world of color, they came out with guns blazing. They didn't go peacefully no place. Every place they went was at peace. There was no armed border protection. There wasn't even borders at that time. They just literally walked in and started killing people. One of the first persons that they would kill in these villages was the spiritual leaders of that village, because they wanted to replace them, and in fact, they did replace them with missionaries. And then they'd send in soldiers to protect the missionary and to set up trading posts whereby the trading was goods at first and eventually became people. And they instigated conflict between peoples and their neighbors and then armed both sides and rewarded the whichever side they wanted to with more arms or without them all or with something they are with, you know, it just fermented and stirring up chaos wherever they went. And that's just the history. And then in the Americas, they just said, look, the climate in the Americas was perfect for them. That's why they settled there. North Canada, Mexico, the U.S., then down in South America, then Argentina, Brazil, along the West Coast, Chile and Peru, Ecuador, Colombia. They were set up by the Spanish, the Portuguese, the British, the French, the Germans. You go on, all Europeans. And what did they do? They began exterminating the native peoples of those places. And in the places where the climate was suitable to the Europeans, they moved in and took it over. Like they took over, like tried to take over South Africa, like they took over Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States. I'm just mentioning a few. All of South America was called this, today it's called what, Latin America, you know, because it was taken over by Spain and Portugal. So, you know, it speaks for itself. The history speaks for itself. It's just a matter of establishing the foundation, the causes for that kind of activity by these kind of people. Why them and no one else in the world? How can you say that they are the same as us when China never invaded or attacked an African? And you can go around the world with all people of color and find the same is true. The only people that are our enemy and that have constantly been our enemy since their inception are the white people. And the reason is because they lost melanin, the biological, psychological development. And this is how we have to bottom out whatever contemporary issues that we have with them, because that is the foundation. This is how they think. Even if they don't know themselves, if they don't consciously think the thought, it's there in their minds. Mm-hmm. And trust me, they know it. All they got to do is look at the NBA or the NFL and see, you know, that black people are dominant, you know, not by any overt act, but just natural, you know. And so anyway, just to give you some kind of foundation. And then the spearhead of their assault against people of color did not begin with Columbus and not coming out. Began long before with the establishment of Christianity, the Catholic Church, whereby they decided to create a hero for themselves, someone to confront the nature worship that they found around the world, you know? And so they created this whole concept of Jesus Christ, which is another story into itself, but we can discuss that too. So I'll pause for questions if there are any.
Okay. Machinda? Brother Machinda, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm just listening, no comment, just appreciate.
Okay, then. What about you, Brother Doctor?
Yeah, I have a few questions. Heard how you described everything, so let me ask you this. I want to rule the world. I want to be the baddest man on the planet. I want everybody to bow down to me. So how can I do that by not being the way that you described the people that are in control? If you understand the question.
He said if he wanted to rule the world, how could he not be like what you described in order to do it? You know, in order to rule the world, you have to be vicious, I guess. Is that right, Doctor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you have to ask the question, why would you want to rule the world in the first place?
Because it's there. That's something I want to do.
2.5 million years. You know, nobody tried to take over and rule it until these Europeans came along. Just 50 years ago. This is 15. This is 3,500 years ago, which, like, it's not even a drop in the bucket of time that humans have walked on this earth. So, you know, why would you want to rule the world? Wouldn't you just want to be happy? Big children, you know what I'm saying? The things that humans love, you know? Why the necessity to go to war, to take what you think is going to make you happy, you know, to violently exterminate, kill, and take another person's land, and then call them savages and say that your religion, your religion, you don't justify your actions, you know, which is what they've done, you know, and then and impose your missionaries with that Christian philosophy, fake Christian philosophy on the whole world and force people to become and think or at least act like they think, like you do. I just look at Black America today, all the churches and the preachers and come on. You know,
so that's the problem. You know what you just said. You know, why would you want to rule the world? You know, and I think that's what happened because we didn't want to rule. That's why we're suffering now, because we wanted just to be happy and free. We sat back and let other people decide to rule the world, and we didn't want to do it. My second question is you talked a bunch about science and stuff earlier, and I don't know if you can hear me. The question would be a little bit dealing with quantum mechanics and determinism. Determinism basically implies that individual human beings have no free will and cannot be held morally responsible for their actions. Do you agree with determinism or super determinism, super determinism have been debunked, but determinism of quantum physics, do you agree with that?
Do I agree with
determinism?
They're responsible for their actions?
Well, with the
not responsible with
the philosophy of determinism, do you agree with that?
The philosophy of determinism.
Determinism.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you're
talking about. That
determinism, but.
But basically, determinism states that.
Maybe that'll cover what you're asking. Africans never ruled the world, not in the context or in the sense that we think of ruling today. I mean, come on, people lived in their communities in the accordance with the rules of nature. They literally worshiped nature all around the world until the catastrophe of 1500 BC. There was no need for policing or for, there was no warfare. I know it's really tough. That was hard for me to accept that fact, but it is a fact. You know, it was why. You'd have to ask why. They didn't try to take over one another's land. For whatever reasons, if there was conflict or a dispute of some sort which had to be settled, then the elders in each of the communities involved would meet and they'd come to a consensus. And that's how they lived. They lived in accordance with the way that the animal world lived around them, because that's what they learned from. You understand? I made the analogy some time ago, you know, that I think it was the lions had killed some animal on the Serengeti, and then a group of hyenas came along. And there was more hyenas than the lions can handle. So the hyenas drove off the lions. The lions retreated and gave up the kill. And meanwhile, another neighboring group, apparently this was on the boundary line between two hyena groups, the neighboring hyena group came and they took possession of it. And then they would drive away to one hyena group, the first one. The first one would regroup and drive away to second. And they went back and forth. And as they went back and forth, each one would take possession of the kill until eventually the kill was gone. And yet there was no bloodshed between the hyenas. They both went back to their own territory and lived their own ways. And in such a manner, you see that nature teaches you that the animals cooperate. They don't go to a pitched physical warfare. It, simply because even if they won the war, they could be injured. And those injuries could lead to some kind of infection or lead to a weakness that would cause them to be fatal. So they determine their hierarchy or their position within the group and when confronted by other groups by natural means that did not resort to all-out warfare. But this was the same with humans until a mutation came along. A mutation acts differently than the norm, as we're experiencing with this corona mutation. Corona mutation, this virus did not just plump out of nowhere and come into being. It's always been there. It just never affected human beings. And the reason it's affecting us now, it's been mutated. It was taken from its normal or natural state and then altered because of the conditions that it lived under, which probably has to do with the climatic conditions, the changes to the environments on Earth created by these human beings. So, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, a virus is merely a bacteria or something similar, even smaller than a bacteria, which attacks, which is always in existence and which is harmless in many cases and in most cases, but a huge amount of viruses are either beneficial or non-negative for humans, except when they become mutated in certain form, and they can attack and multiply within your body, and boom. So, you know, this corona thing is certainly not the first, and certainly not the last either. And he had the flu, and you can go all the way back through time. And most of the negative viruses that have assaulted human beings have been within the last 200 to 300 years, mostly due to this industrial revolution. And not only viruses, other factors as well, you know, like cancer and tuberculosis, you know, coming from smoking and that thing's invented. I got to plug in my phone here. It's running out of juice. Just a second. Okay. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm plugged in. Okay, so, you know, that's the point I'm trying to make then is that Black people never, quote unquote, ruled the world. You know, that's a misconception. We might have prospered in the world and been the leaders of the natural sciences at the time, but you cannot show that we've ever been alien to other people around the world.
Okay. Doctor, you have any other questions?
No, that's what I'm kind of saying. You know, like what the example you use with the hyenas. You can't play victim or cry about what others are doing is dominating you when you won't fight back stronger and harder. You're going to always be a victim. Nothing's going to ever change. You can't complain about other people if you're not going to sit there and do anything about it. So you continue going to be a victim. You know, you're going to let other people rule because you want to be nice. You know, and it's, I don't think it's right for to sit there and complain about other things. You know, people complain about being victims when no one wants to do anything, get on that level to change anything. So would you just be victims and complain about other dominant people when you don't want to change and get just as ruthless as them? You know, they set an example. You know, our actions are determined by external causes. And if we don't meet those external causes, we're always going to be in the same situation. You know, that's just my point. You know, nothing's going to ever change until we meet those external causes that's putting us in those situations. You know, like I said, if we would have never sat back on our hands and let them just take over, you know, Africa should have took over. They should have dominated the world. They should have sat back and been free, friendly with everybody. You know, like I saw this movie the other day, no one cares about the bomb that didn't go off. You know, you're sitting around, you know, no one cares about the bomb that didn't go off. You know, so like I said, you sit here and talk all that, but if you don't do nothing, you want to be friendly, you want them to like you, you're going to always lose. We're in the losing game because, you know, we don't want to, you know, deal with those external causes, what they're doing. That's just you know, what I see. And thank you for your time.
Okay.
I don't think I understood the question. But
I'll go back over it. I want to get to Brother Henry. Henry?
Yes, sir. First of all, I appreciate your presentation. I study in that area a lot myself. You know, if we can just, you know, recultivate what lies between our ears as far as our mental state and our spirituality state, we could see it. But we've been so ingrained with the values of the conqueror, we can't look back to see what we were prior to that. Appreciating what you said about the no conflict and war, I remember studying the area where when there was an African dispute between two groups of African people, they would get their best dancer or best wrestler, and they would let them compete, and that would settle the dispute. You know, you know, there's many things, that we did prior. Well, first of all, let me go back to describing this European, which you speak about. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, Urugu. It's about the Dogon people and how they describe this Urugu figure in their folklore. It's a little shriveled up white guy, and he is anti-nature, and his whole aim is to bring destruction and disunity throughout the universe. You know, that's what the European psyche is all about. Because when they came up out that ice box, you know, they, you know, when all them hundreds of years without being able to eat right and no sunlight and minds all messed up, and just that aggressive attitude, you know, when, you know, like if you got 10 people sitting around the table that ain't ate in a week and you throw one slice of bread out there, you know, you can imagine what type of mentality, you know, would involve about that piece of bread. But what African culture would do, they would break that bread up into 10 pieces and share it with everyone. And this is the type of mentality of the people that we come from. We had a great sense of humanity, no land ownership, borders, land ownership, and all that stuff is a European concept. As far as a people of color thought, you know, the land belonged to the creator, and you can't own, you know, what the creator has, that's his or hers, can't own that. But that's what the European brought to our, well, you know, brought out of that ice box and then on to us. And with the Industrial Revolution, took the natural resources from Africa to industrialize. And speaking on the point of the Industrial Revolution and the effects that it has had on nature due to these textiles and all this other stuff, polluting the air, the water, the ground, and all of that. Even with this mining after gold, you know, hitting these high powered hoses on the hill to wash trees, you know, look for precious metals and whatnot. But anyway, I just want to end with this. And it was a quote from this physicist from Canada. And it said that, I think I sent it to the brothers in the past, man is an insane species. Tell man, period, says he worships an invisible God and destroys a visible nature, not knowing that the nature that he's destroying is the God that he's worshiping.
Beautifully put. Yes. I couldn't have said it better. If I could just inject a comment here, the idea of creating man as God is strictly a European concept. No other people, you can't find that kind of thinking with any other people on this earth. Everyone worshiped nature in some form or another, and varied from location to location, but they were dependent upon that sun and this earth and the dirt and the soil and the rain, and thus they worshiped it. You know, all science was built upon the foundations of that respect for nature. And this is something that the Europeans have totally separated, divided themselves from that concept in order that they could replace nature as in trying to, I mean, come on, you think any African would have wanted to go to the moon? Just ask yourself that sometime. For what? Go to the moon for what? You know, do you think any African wanted to climb up to the top of, what's that mountain, in the highest mountain? For what? In order to prove what? You understand? These were people who were accepting of the nature, the rules that nature implied. And the more they studied nature, the more predictable nature became. And once it became predictable, then they knew how to live in accordance with it, and they prospered. You understand? They started building cities, and you know, you went from the village to the city, and monuments and trinkets, and, you know, enjoying life more and more, become more artistic, more exemplary towards all forms of art and culture, because they had the leisure to do that, now understanding that nature was what it is. You know, you understand? And the European came along, and their enemy was nature. Well, you know, claimed that such a thing, but you really got to understand and their history. Just study it. Their enemy is nature. They've assaulted nature at every turn. Look at when they came to the Americas, to the West. One of the first things they did after they had wiped out the natives all throughout the eastern part of the U.S. and Canada, and started going west. When they got there, they started killing off the thing that the native people needed to survive, the buffalo. The people built their lives around the buffalo. They were the Sioux, the Blackfeet, the Crow. In my book, I have nearly 3 pages which list all of these various tribes that they exterminated, wiping out their living the habitats, by burning of the forest in the east and by destroying the animals in the west, and then planting corn and wheat and etc. You know, taking over. They even offered bounties on buffalo. All you had to do was cut their tongues out or cut their ears off and bring them to the town, and you were paid for that. And the body of the buffalo was just left there to rot. You know, they took they offered bounties on the native people, the Indians themselves, you know, cut off the tit of a female or the scalp of a male, and they pay you. And then after they had nearly exterminated everybody and moved the remainders into these concentration camps that they call reservation, after they had done that, then they took the lands and gave it away. Now, you've heard of the Homestead Act, where these people were given free land. All they had to do was come there and drive a stake in the ground. It was theirs. Oh, my goodness. When you said that, this is only a minuscule portion of their history. The whole thing from their inception is one of violence, of degradation, of, you can't think of, I can't even think of all the words to put on it. And now, today, we wonder, well, why do they attack us? Why do they kill our young men? Why are we in prison? That's why. Racism. And where does this racism come from? An inferiority complex. It ain't got nothing to do with whatever the brother was trying to ask before. It has to do with biology, with genetics. It's that simple. And once we understand and accept that concept, then we could sit down and better discuss these problems that we face contemporarily. Without that, we're in the age of it. We'll be extinct. We're headed for that right now. And even they know that and are trying to replace that probability with robots. Think about that. I mean, really in depth. Think about that. Give that some thought. Because more and more they're creating robots to replace people.
Right. Rashiki, you have any questions?
Well, I just was thinking about some things that I heard some years back, like the great artificer, I don't know if Jerry had said that before, but they're the great, huh?
Master artificers.
Yeah.
Master
artificers. Yeah. And then you think about harmony. Nature and harmony and how it works, you know. And then you have, when you have the, like you was talking about mutations, you have this disharmony, and it causes you, you know, to want to destroy and conquer. And I understand where you're coming from, and I've learned a lot throughout the years, you know, listening. I read both of the books. It was some years ago when they first came out. You know, just it's great information. And like you said, if you understand it, you got to have some understanding. And I wouldn't want to be demonic, you know, and want to conquer people. So I think it's the understanding. That's all. And then with understanding, you can better, you know, do things. You can understand your environment, and you can maneuver better when you have understanding of it. That's all I had to say.
Okay. You know,
go ahead, Jamal.
How do I put this? I'm with all the discussions about the problems that we face today. But in every instance, I find that the people discussing them just don't know the origins. And I believe, maybe I'm right or wrong, but I believe that unless and until we understand the origins, we're not going to be able to effectively do anything about it. That's why I put all my energy into getting out this information so that, you know, it'll stimulate other researchers who have the time and to look into it even more and more until we really lay the whole thing out, and then we can sit down and really have intelligent discussions about, yeah, we've got a problem. We've had a problem for years, hundreds, millennia, centuries, and we need to do something about it. And how do we, what do we do? How do we go about that? And that's why I believe that it's important to understand the foundations. You know, I don't know all about ancient Egyptian society, how they lived, you know, day to day and all of that. But I do know that their religion was based on a natural preservation of nature. They never polluted nature. That was a no-no, period. Nature was their God, their maker, their creator, and they saw it that way, and they passed it down from generation to generation until, as I said, these mutations came along and attacked it, assaulted it. And nowadays, their attack is to just simply ignore who these people are or what they were and continue to impose their own science on it and calling it perfection, when in fact it's destroying the earth. And we've got to see that. And, you know, even if they don't accept it, that's what's going on. Truly, you know, so it comes down in the end to whether you're really ready, willing to turn off your factories, which are killing the environment, and lay off thousands of people, you know, or whether you keep the factories open so that you can pay those people and you can make all that money, you know, and you can buy you the big mansion and all the trinkets that come with that, you know. But meanwhile, this earth is being destroyed, and it's going to continue that down that road until, in fact, we, as you know, what we are today as people, are going to be out of it, gone forever, extinct.
Well, I just, first of all, I want to say this aside. Thanks for your deep thought and analysis. And, you know, you asked the question, why would the Caucasian want to kill people who haven't done nothing to them, want to dominate people? You know, well, I mean, why, you know, so you look at the inferiority aspects of it from the standpoint of racism and wanting to dominate people. And so you have to ask that question, why? And I think you've done a good job in answering it, because it is unnatural from that standpoint. Most people just want to live on the earth. But the European mind is, I got to rule the earth in order for me to be happy, in order for me to feel security. And you know, those things, that there's been much writing about that. Much writing from folk, from history. That's what people build defenses against. China had a cultural revolution. And, you know, they're trying to expand from the standpoint of economics and investing in other countries, but they didn't go there to enslave the people and take their stuff. And the same thing with other people. They just want to live on the earth. And so that was a good question. I want to thank you for your presentation, Asar, and hope that you get back to Cuba safe and sound, so you can get with your family and everything. We hope that book come out, and when it comes out, you know, you have a standing invitation to come back. We get on our platform, and we're gonna do everything we can to circulate it. But we just want to say, you know, I know that you're 3 hour difference in Florida from what we are, and you got your grandkids and your kids. They probably have to work in the morning, so we're gonna let Rashiquito's what's gonna come on Wednesday and close us on out. But thanks again, Asar, for the short notice and for you to come and spend your valuable time with us. It's been a pleasure. And we will continue this discussion amongst ourselves later on. But go ahead, Rashiquito, let's close it out.
Okay, so we got Curtis Johnson, a high school teammate of mine, went to junior high school together also. He's a minister, and his topic is self-afflicted problems of the Black man. So that should be interesting. Kind of a little different from what we talked about this evening, but I think that will be interesting. I would love to hear Professor Rod's take on that topic. So looking forward to that. And it's going to be a panel discussion. But that's what's going on.
All right. Brother Henry, do you have any closing remarks before we close out?
Yeah, brother, sorry, still there?
Yes.
I wanted to get your take on this, you know, in talking about nature and man and how the European has tried to control nature and things that he's done to other people, mainly us, and how our reverence for nature is striking back at him where he's conducted these atrocities against our people. For example, the hurricanes that leave from West Africa every year and go to the resort areas that Europeans have along the Gulf Coast and the Eastern Seaboard, you know, giving them all kind of hell. And also with the volcanoes in the island areas that are erupting, and also the fires that are bringing all these places down, you know, European has chose to live, you know, so he wouldn't be near us. And my question is, how do you feel about nature striking back as a force for what has happened to itself and us?
Well, very simply put, nature is non-political. it is, you know, everything. It doesn't choose sides. It doesn't care. At one point, as pointed out before, the reptiles ruled the earth, and now the mammals do. And it doesn't matter to nature one way or the other, which does. You know, what matters is that nature rules. The earth is so, you know, 93 million miles or so away from the sun, and it's going to maintain that relationship for a while, and eventually it's going to get closer and things will gradually change. And when there is gradual change, then human populations will usually adjust as they go along. But it's these catastrophic events that suddenly change things, which you're unable to react to in time. And eventually one of them is going to be so strong that we won't be able to react at all. And that's the problem. So, you know, it's like this corona thing came. If we'd seen it coming, could have made preparations, but we didn't. It hit, boom. And it wiped out, I don't know what the count is today, and it's still going on, and it'll continue. And once it's gone, then another one will come along, and on and on and on. And so we've got to understand that's the world of nature that we live in. And unfortunately, we put all our science towards achieving what these white people have created and for science, what they call science, white science, I call it. And that is the worst thing we could have done because it's leading to destruction, that destruction of all life on this earth in the forms that we know it today.
All right. Okay. Brother Rashiquito. Yes, and again, a million times, you know, know, I thank you, Asai, and I'll give you a call and just let you know how much we deeply appreciate your presence and your presentation. All right, Rasha Keith?
Yeah. And also, I want to ditto that. Excellent. I mean, always enjoyed your scholarship and teaching. Thanks a lot. I'm very appreciative.
All right. Okay.
Each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right. So, you take care, bro.
Okay, brother.